Hey everybody, welcome to Smashing Game Time. We are two brothers that go through gaming's back catalog of yesteryear. I am your host, Nick. I am joined, as always, by my brother, Josh. And today we have a special guest. He's the founder of Motion Twin and lead game developer on Dead Cells. He is now CEO of Deep Night Games and is the solo developer of Nuclear Blaze, a Metroidvania Josh and I both love dearly. Everybody welcome Sebastian Bernard. Sebastian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you to invite me here. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So we, Josh and I, over the last few months, got really, really into Nuclear Blaze. And, you know, it was a game that I became aware of in 2021, and it sat in my Steam library for the better part of a few years during COVID. And so we finally, I gave it a try, and I was like, Josh, you should really play this game. This is great. Like, you're just a little firefighter bean guy, like, fighting this fire, going deeper and deeper into this lair. And, you know, it's something that clicked with both of us, which usually doesn't happen. Usually, you know, you have your group friends, friend groups where you recommend a game and everyone else is like, he doesn't know what he's doing. But this is something that clicked for both of us. In my research of Nuclear Blaze, it looks like it was a game jam game or a competition variant of game jam. Where did the idea of Nuclear Blaze boil up for you? Where was that cooking?
Actually, it's quite an old idea, I had. I always wanted to make like a fireman type of game, like a platformer fireman thing. But for some reason, I kept the idea in my mind for a long time, and I always was looking for an equivalent. And for some reason, you don't have much actually firefighting games in 2D, especially. Most of them are more like super realistic simulations, and usually from Germany for reasons. So it was an old idea that I had, but. So I participated a Ludum Dare competition, a game jam, and I thought it would be like a nice idea to try this, to see how I could make such a game. And also my kid, he was 3 years old at this time, and he was like a big fan of, I don't know the English name for this show, it was a Fireman something, Sam, is it Sam? I'm not sure.
Sam,
I think there was an equivalent title in English, but I don't know the English one. And it's like Paw Patrol, basically. And he's a big fan of that. I thought maybe it would be like a small game I can make for him. And I actually turned out to be a much bigger thing in the end. But it started like that.
So coming from Dead Cells, because Dead Cells, you have your roguelike elements, you have your Metroidvania elements, so you're coming from that side of things and making this smaller game. Were there any lessons in your time on Dead Cells that like really went hand in hand in your time with making Nuclear Blaze?
Just a side mention, the Metroidvania part of Dead Cells is honestly it's a joke, because basically you just have Metroidvania on the first two levels, and that doesn't exist anymore in the game. It's more like a rogue, honestly. But yeah, my first learning was like, I won't make a rogue anymore, another rogue, because it's really like a quite complex topic. But fun fact, the game I'm working right now on is actually a rogue again. So I guess we just get back to our kings.
Old habits.
Exactly. But I knew I really wanted to make more platformer games, because I think you have many things that you can do with this kind of game. And definitely learn lots of different things from Dead Cells. But mostly my main takeaway, if you just ignore the rogue part and the action part, was really to just try to make sure that the player gets hooked in the game quite quickly. First, the fact that you jump right away from the helicopter and suddenly you're right in the middle of the action, and this kind of thing. But aside from that, my intent with this goal was to make like a much smaller game, especially because it was my first one as a solo dev. So I really wanted to have a small scope project something that I could achieve in a few months, and that's it. And which actually succeeded because it was quite a short project in the end. But it also left me with some frustration about upgrades and progression and beta progression and stuff like that, which actually led me to make Rogue after. But yeah, aside from that, it was really quite a new project, honestly, quite a new project for me, a different one.
So, and I was talking with Josh about Hold My Beer mode the other night. Even in the first run of the game, it's a little more difficult than I thought it was going to be going in. And I recently watched an interview that you did, I think it was with GameSpot, where you talked about Dead Cells. And I think there was a portion of the video about the jumping and like where like if you jumped after you missed, like you could jump would still register after like if you had ran off the platform by a few frames. And that was something about, you know, ease of access for players and like, you know, kind of being more forgiving on the side on that side. So when you came into this, were you wanting to be a little less forgiving? Did you want to present more of a challenge going into this for players?
Yeah, because it's really, for me, it really depends on what's the point of the game, what's the topic of the game actually. And in Dead Cells, it has never been a platformer game. It has always been a combat game first. So basically, that means that platforming should not get in the way of the player. So it's really not a game where you have to make a very precise jump to avoid falling to your death, because that's the worst death possible. In Dead Cells, it's the most boring death, actually. We really wanted to make the game an action and combat game, really, first. For this one, it was different because even though I didn't want to make like a full platformer, like a manic platformer, I knew that the platforming part would be a little bit more important, just because the danger is more like the environment and you don't have much hostiles going around. So the platformer part was a little bit more important. I definitely made a few bad choices, especially for the platforming part in Nuclear Blaze, which every time I play it again, I feel like a few things, the jumping curve, stuff like that, could definitely see some improvement. But for this one, yes, the platforming part was a little bit more important, which led me to be a little less you have less assistance for this part.
I think I just muted. Sorry. So as we had mentioned before, this Nuclear Blaze was originally something that you dreamt up during, I think it was Ludum Dare 48.
Yeah, I think.
It was about 3-4 years ago at this point. And the theme there was deeper and deeper. And so for those who don't know Nuclear Blaze, you're getting deeper and deeper into this mysterious facility. So my question to follow that up is, you really want, and in fact, to quote you here, I couldn't implement everything I wanted to get closer to the actual theme, but the general idea was to make a game where you really feel that things are getting worse and worse and out of control at some point. And so that, all that to say, you've had this 20 years in game development. Were there any moments in the last 20 years that you were pulling from? Because I mean, you look at the state of game development and game publishing right now, and things are just, you know, it does seem like things are getting worse and worse and out of control in the current state of things. Did you ever have a moment in your 20 years in the industry where you felt like, oh, things are getting worse and worse out of control? I mean, you don't have to drop any names or anything, but
I can totally. No, I should not do that. Definitely. I did that some time ago and should definitely not do that again. Anyway, definitely. For me, I would not have the same perception as many people and media tend to, how they tend to describe the current situation in video games. For me, the main shift and the moment where I felt that thing went in a bad direction somehow is when iPhone came out, basically, because I love the iPhone, I love all mobile devices. I think they are like from a hardware perspective and a gameplay area, it's like you can do crazy thing on that. I mean, Pokemon Go and this kind of crazy ideas, you have so many cool things to do on mobile. But the thing is, mobile is completely made like a store, and a very small one, because if you are not visible on the front store, basically on Apple and Android, it's exactly the same. You just don't exist, and really shift the perception of players of video games. Suddenly, video games became cheap. Like it should not cost that much. Like we had so many €1 and €2 games, and suddenly everything was all about ARPU, average revenue per user, on this horrible slope that went to the game as a service state, which has cool things because we've been making free-to-play games on the web before that at Motion Twin, but it went really like way deeper in this dark pattern world, like way too deep in my opinion. So for me, one of the worst moments in video game industry was this moment, this shift. But as of today, I think it's a different situation. I think we are more like in a transition moment where the industry, the way it works currently with the investments, the production costs, and the size of teams and everything like that, probably won't be able to sustain much longer than it currently is. So we have this, you know, indiepocalypse and these many layoffs on so many companies that today are happening. But I really have this feeling that it's just a succession of bad strategic decisions from higher executives that felt like it was an investment rather than making games. I mean, and so I think this situation is like really bad, but feels like to me more like a transition to probably a different type of company sizes or team sizes. For example, just to explain my point quickly, it's way easier today to be a solo dev than to be like in a AAA company, really, because of the layoffs, obviously, but also because of the production cost of making a game. But we are also at a point where making a game alone is like really feasible. I mean, we have AI tools to help us. We have lots of really user-friendly engine to use. So many tutorials everywhere to make pretty much anything. So it's like possible to do that in a very small team, and your costs are not that high. So it's a cool moment actually for solo devs and very small teams. But it's hard time for bigger ones because the costs are went really high. So it just doesn't work anymore. The revenues versus the cost just doesn't align anymore. But we probably adapt to that at some point, I guess. It's a long explanation. Sorry.
Oh no, you're good. As a solo dev, like, what is that? You know, going from, you know, having this big team and having these people that wear all these different hats to going into, oh, I wear all the hats now. I'm the hat wearer. What is your biggest concern, or like, what do you feel like is your biggest challenge facing you when it comes to, you know, making your games, getting them out there? What is your biggest concern go like on the solo side of things?
Just like you said, it's you have to do more things and many different things, like art development and marketing, to be really broad. And you cannot be good at everything. It's like impossible. You don't have time to be good at everything. So you have to make choices, or you have to work with a very small selection of people on very specific topics. To find a good person for the marketing when you need it, you need him or more like that. But I honestly, I'm more like I'm a game jam person. Honestly, I like challenges. I like to do much with nothing, and that's also a reason why, which explains why I like working as a solo dev. But you also have to find, I would not say smart, but more like ways to optimize the way you create a game to actually achieve your idea. So I like to say sometimes my next project, not the current one, but the next one, will probably be more like almost an open world game in 2D, but still an open world-ish probably. And I like to have this challenge on how I can make an open world while still being solo. How is it even possible? But to do this kind of thing, you have to reimagine what is an open world. Should it be like an Ubisoft style of open world? Should it be something different? So it's more like finding ways to overcome this kind of challenges. That's the difficult part, because you cannot be good at everything. So you have to either optimize or find the proper persons for a specific task.
Were there, in the transition, were there any issues for you when it came to scaling the game? Or were you like, no, I am but one man. I can only do so much. How going, I mean, looking at Dead Cells and then looking at Nuclear Blaze. I mean, I'm not looking at how many gigabytes each game is, but I would imagine Nuclear Blaze isn't taking up nearly as much memory on my machine right now. Any issues with scaling for you as you went solo?
Just a fun fact about that. We actually filled the Dead Cells files with 0 byte just because it was not big enough when you downloaded it. Just fun story. And now it actually weighs really much more because of many content we have. But at the beginning, we actually bloated the game a little bit because people would not take seriously a 50 megabit game. that's stupid, but that's the way it was. It really depends on how the game is designed to the core. For example, ramping up a rogue is way easier than ramping up a level design game like Nuclear Blaze, because basically you transform your. For example, if I spend 1 hour making a level in a Nuclear Blaze, it will be played in 15 seconds, basically by a player. So it's the ratio between my work and the actual playtime is like super bad, like very, very bad. And it can actually get worse if you're making a fully narrative game, for example. While when you make a game like Dead Cells or any kind of rogue, when you make a new weapon in your game, even if you spend 1 hour making this weapon, it will be played, sorry about the noise, it will be played for hours and hours. And because of the combinatory aspect, you can combine weapons, it will actually play for a very long time. So your development time versus the play time is a much more positive ratio. So it really depends on the game. So that's why also I'm making a rogue right now, because I wanted to make like a very big game, but I couldn't afford to make like an actual big game. So I have to rely more on mechanics and combinations between items and exploration to actually produce like a big content while still being solo.
So for this new game, and I'm sure you have announcements down the pipeline. I won't ask for names or anything, but as we had talked about earlier, the state of the industry is not too favorable at the moment. Have there been any thoughts of going and finding a publisher, or are you just like very gung-ho about like, no, like solo, I'm putting this out, I'll do the marketing, or I'll find the marketing team for this. I don't need to be pushing for a publisher.
It really depends on that's a broad topic, a publishing question, but mostly it's related to do you need money, and when do you need it? It's basically that. So if you need money right now, unless you rob a bank, you don't have money right now, or you have a side job and you pay for the bill using a side job. But publisher mostly will feel this very first need, which is I need money right now to pay me while I make the game, right? Because when you make the game, you will be paid after, so it's probably too late for you. But a marketing question also is a very important topic, because if you don't like or don't want to make it by yourself, and it's a very time-consuming task, so to say the least, you will have to have someone anyway to make your marketing, because that would be a suicidal move to just say, hey, I will make a game and just push the release button and hope for the best, unless you have a big influencer suddenly noticing you. Probably will not happen. So you have to work marketing properly, and publishers usually do a good job at that. I was really lucky enough to find a very cool one. I cannot announce anything yet, but a very cool one. Yeah, it's definitely something that, especially as a solo developer, unless you have a solid bank account behind you and like lots of you're like super famous or something, you will probably need these two, money and marketing at some point. So publisher move is definitely a good move, I think.
Let's hop back into the games a little bit. I wanted to ask, so I was digging through your portfolio on the Deep Night games, and there's a lot of variety here. And, I wanted to ask, cause what was the one I was playing? I was playing Sub Dragon before. And what was the other one? I was playing some Blossom. The one that really, really grabbed my goat was Tenjutsu. So I just have to ask, you can kind of get a vibe for like the art you're going for, but do you have any, like, what are your big influences in the industry? Do you have like games that you continuously look back at and be like, oh, this is what I'm chasing, or this is what I'm implementing over here?
I have a few things that I always keep in my mind. Like games I will definitely do at some point. For example, I'm really a big fan of Stalker, and especially the movie, but the games also are really amazing. And I really like this mood of, not exactly post-apocalyptic, but more like desolate place exploration. We had a good test with COVID, but it's pretty close to that. So definitely something I would love to do, and I always keep an eye on any kind of new game that feels like that, especially the next Stalker, hopefully. I also rely a lot on old games because I'm a big fan. I've been playing games since I was a kid. I'm 40, so it's a long time now. So I rely on old games that I really loved. I would like to adapt somehow, but for me, it's not about copying the exact same game, because if you were to play an old game today, it will just play bad. It aged poorly, so definitely not something I would like to do. A good example for that is Tenjutsu, because fun fact, it's actually the game I'm working on right now. It's a rogue kung fu game, this kind of spiritual successor to the Tenjutsu Jam game. But it's heavily based on an old game which I really loved, which was International Karate Plus, which was basically a fighting game. It was just multiplayer game mostly, but the feeling of the combat in this game was really, in my mind, as I remember, was really cool. But it doesn't, it actually isn't anymore, definitely. But for me, it's more like adapting the feeling that I had from this game as modern to modern standard, and to make to produce the exact same kind of feeling of having a combat game, like a true combat game.
Josh, I'm going to hand it off to you, because I've been asking all the questions, so I don't want to.
I didn't want to be rude, Jim, because I know you have your list and I hadn't seen it, so I was just like, well, so I have to ask, because I'm a very curious person. I've played every aspect of your game. I loved it so much. I mean, I'm not trying to fangirl about it, but I mean, honestly, this was all I was telling Nick before the show. Like, this is one of the first games in a long time on the indie side that like hooked me into the point where I literally played it for 6 days straight and 100%ed it. Loved it that much.
Thank you.
That rarely happens. So first off, thank you for that. But the SCPs and the cat aspects of it, where did that come from? Because honestly, I mean, the SCPs definitely fit in with the feeling of the vibe you're going for, but the cats is what kind of threw me off. But I also liked it because obviously I don't want to ruin too much for Nick since he still hasn't finished Hold My Beer yet, but because of the twist that comes from getting all of them, where do those come in from? Because it really, I was like, wow, this is like really gripping with the SCPs and the cats. I was thrown off a little bit, but then all of a sudden I grew into it and loved it more because it was just something different. Where did that come from, that inspiration?
The cat versus SCP was a struggle that I had with this game since the beginning and still have as of today. Actually, at first, I really wanted to make an SCP game, like a true one, and you were actually fighting a very specific anomaly, and actually there was one from the SCP lore that I really wanted to adapt somehow. But the thing is, I couldn't do that, mostly for licensing reasons. And as much as I love the SCP universe, they have a very strict, it should be free. The game should have been free, which makes adapting the SCP lore to a video game quite complex. For example, if you see the game Control from Remedy, it basically is a SCP game, just like Pacific Drive recently. It really is a SCP game. But because of this licensing, they cannot say it out loud, because it will be like the game should be free because of that. And the fun fact, they actually mentioned this SCP relationship. Remedy did mention that in one interview, like almost they did that accidentally. But it was quickly said, oh, it's not exactly SCP, it's our own thing. But so I wanted first to make an SCP game, like deep in this kind of lore of having anomalies and government stuff and all of that. But because I couldn't make that, I still needed to have something a little bit more light, something a little bit more serious, less serious in this game. So, and I also wanted to make secrets. I really wanted to have in every levels like a secret to find and to figure out. I think I did put a cat in the very first secret just for fun, because I thought it would be like, yes, your fireman, you basically are selling cats, which is your second part of your job. But it became a trope in the game because it was obvious that secrets should be cats. You're trying to locate cats. It's a side quest, which actually turns out to be a more important quest in the game, but it was more like the lighter tone element in the game, like having something a little less serious than deep, dark SCP vibes. So both of them actually are kind of fighting together in the design space.
Okay.
Serious tone versus cat.
Perfect. Thank you for that. The other one I had, following the cat hat as we go down, Nick, this might be a slight spoiler, so I apologize.
I'll forget by the time I go back to it.
That's fair. The the litter incident. What inspired that? Because I'm assuming maybe it was maybe like you had an incident like that, or someone told you about it. Because I mean, it's very on brand, and it like makes you click in your head and go, oh, "Okay, this makes sense now." But I'm like, once again, I'm like, man, this is really left field, and I'm liking it. But I'm very curious where this inspiration came from.
Actually, I did have in my life, I had two cats and I just have one now, but I had this exact thing, like one of my cats basically peed on an electric thing, and it short-circuit the whole house for 2 days. And just because he actually made a small pee on an electric device, which was not the one that should have any kind of water on it. I actually had a similar incident years ago, and I thought it would be fun to have it's the same reason as the final boss, the enemy that you're actually fighting. It's the same kind of absurd thing that actually have like stupid consequences. And so that's really something that I love from SCP or from liminal space concept in general. You have something like which is like plain stupid, like it's a daily thing, just the boss. Again, I will probably spoil a little bit, but the fact it's just a furniture. But it actually has a huge impact on reality. It has a huge impact on this place, on this facility. So I was kind of amused just of that, you know, something stupid happened, but it actually had huge consequences of releasing this this anomaly, and which actually took the whole facility down. Mostly kind of a joke, but which was so stupid that it actually could have happened if the anomaly did exist.
And that's what made me think something like that happened, because I'm like, it's so random, but it's like, you know what? I bet you he either heard a story or he has a story of this actually happening, because it's just, it makes you think, you're like, huh, yeah, I can see that. I've had incidents with my animals and doing stuff that had huge consequences. I'm like, there's got to be something there. Now, with that being said, is there a chance of a nuclear blaze too?
That's a good question. I would like to, because I think there's lots of room to make something bigger out of this game. But if I was to make an episode 2 out of that, I would probably have more systemic gameplay that the currently has. The currently is more like a little bit of systems with a fire propagation and stuff, but mostly it's a narrative, not Vanya game, because you don't have such things that Vanya loop, that more like a platforming adventure game, basically. If I was to make a 2, I would definitely put more action and more strategy in it, like you have more ways to actually complete a section. And I would probably also have more variety in fire. So I have ideas on how to make a 2, definitely. I'm not sure I will make it right now, because I have at least 2 things I really want to do first, 2 games, the current one and the next one. But I definitely keep that in mind, because I like this idea of you fighting fire. It's like gameplay-wise, you have so many interesting things to do with that. In this game, for tech limitations, I didn't, for example, make like the environment explode or destroy, getting destroyed or collapse, like really dynamically. But that's definitely something I would love to do, like make a way more systemic game using fire. So you are basically fighting fire on the house, but everything can collapse. So it's really a little bit more organic and more adaptive gameplay. That's something for later. I'm still, I have the ideas in mind. I just let them mature and evolve slowly in my mind. So maybe one day I would just make a game out of that. But for now, it's not mature enough to turn it into a game.
All right, Nick, do you have any more on your list?
Yeah, I've got just a few. Speaking of not so much the limitations, but just the run of the game. This is the only Metroidvania that I can think of that doesn't have combat outright, which I thought was very, very refreshing. Was that the choice from the get-go with you, or did you ever try? Because I mean, eventually there is that boss fight at the end, and apparently there's another one that I haven't seen yet. But was there ever an attempt to have additional enemies, and then it just didn't work, or were you like, I just want to fight this fire?
Actually, you have the bees at some point, which are but they are a good sign that it's not a good idea to make combat in this game, because they are more annoying than actually fun to fight. And it's mostly because you're just pouring water around you. So that definitely is a game which by design isn't fit for combat, like actual combat, an hostile enemy, HP, damage and stuff like that. But I have the feeling that you have potentially way more things to do in this kind of gameplay. I think I didn't have time for this one, because again, it was a very small scope project. I actually didn't have much time to develop this concept furthermore. But I really loved this idea from the get-go of having it's not exactly non-combat, because you are actually fighting fire, but right. It's not you're not fighting a specific entity. You're more fighting the whole level. As a whole, so you're just trying to adapt and to control the fire until you finally hopefully extinguish it. But it's more like your enemy, the combat is against the level. For example, something I really loved when I was a kid, I did play quite a lot of shoot 'em up games like UN Squadron, for example, which I loved as a kid. And in shoot 'em ups, you have bosses, which are most of the time like twice or three times bigger than the screen. Like they are huge fortresses, and you have to take down every part of the fortress before taking down the whole boss. I really like this kind of design of you don't have a single enemy. the enemy is actually made of multiple parts, and you can take down whatever part you want first, but your goal is to take everything down anyway. So you have to decide what you are fighting first. And I like this kind of design, and Nuclear Blaze was based on this idea. You have to fight the world level. It's up to you on how to you want to approach that. And actually, it's very organic because fire can actually propagate behind you. So you have to adapt also to this fact. So yeah, but it's not combat. If I was to make a 2, I would probably not make combat again because I don't think it suits the theme.
And I had honestly forgotten about the bees, so I think that's a good sign. instead of me coming in here beating my chest saying, oh, the bees, why'd you add the bees? Hold My Beer mode. I think Hold My Beer mode is one of the better New Game Plus modes I've played in the game in a long time. Yeah. I know there's a tendency with New Game Plus to just re-deliver the same game with, buffed up enemies and maybe a little weaker character. But this feels like an attempt to like kind of, you know, I liken it to like Resident Evil 2 with like the scenario A and scenario B, kind of like it's the same space, but there are some differences if you're really paying attention, and then the paths start to change a little bit. What going into Hold My Beer mode, like first of all, was Hold My Beer mode always there, or was that something where you're like, I want to beef this guy up a little bit? Yeah, just in general, new beer mode.
It was not here at the beginning. It was mostly for me a response to the fact that the game is rather short. So I really wanted to have a way to expand the game content while not doubling the production, because it was way too long for me to make twice more levels. And also had this feeling that the game was not gameplay-wise, again, was not deep enough to have twice more levels. It will just become boring at some point. So I really thought maybe it would be better to actually reuse the current content with variation, which are significant enough to actually have a new lecture or a new view on the existing levels that you explored, maybe new bits of lore, of information about what's going on. And actually, it was something that we had in Dead Cells before going to, because we now have a New Game Plus 1-5, I think, in the Dead Cells, which basically is exactly what you said, which is like a buffed enemies and pretty much that, and that's it. But the initial design was to actually have a dark world version of the main game. You explore the game first, you beat it, and you actually go to the dark version, like in the TV show, what's the name again? Netflix show with Stranger Things, right. This kind of visual. You had dark tentacles everywhere, so every enemy were different. But it was also very expensive to do that. It was basically, we had to remake every single enemy, all the biomes and the environments. So it was a little bit too expensive, so we decided to go for a much cheaper route. But for this one, I felt like it was actually possible to make a more balanced version of that, like same levels, but alternative routes. And more difficulties where it was actually way more simple in the default version, or more limitation, like you have less water in this version than in the default one, which actually forces you to play differently. I really like this kind of approach. After I've done that on Nuclear Blaze, I have now this feeling that it's actually not that expensive way to do things, but it's very interesting because you're rediscovering stuff that you knew by heart before. I knew this level, it does play like that. And actually, when you play it in New Game Plus, there is another door, another room, and suddenly it's not played the same way. And it's not that expensive to do that, but the result as a player, it's actually nice. It's close to these wow moments that you get when you play a Vanya game. For example, you see this crumbled wall, you cannot open it, and you get a bomb later, and suddenly, oh, the crumbled wall I actually saw before, actually I can now go through. And it's a way to produce that in the game. You see a closed gate, and if you understand, you will know that the new game plus will allow you to open this gate. So it's like a Vanya-ish approach.
I'm still caught up on you calling the new game plus of Dead Cells at one point the Dark World, because as a Super Meat Boy fan, like, that just that tickled me.
Just to mention that I'm a big fan of games that manage to surprise you. Like, you think you have completed the game, and suddenly the game says to you, "Hey, I'm twice longer." Like, really, like typically the reverse castle in Castlevania, or the Dark World in Zelda, or Super Meat. The game you mentioned. So I like when a game managed to do that. So that's definitely so. And again, it's not that more costly to do that. It's really just a way to rearrange your content. Resident Evil is a great example of that. It's pretty much the same place, but different perspective. And suddenly you understand things that you previously didn't, just because you have a different perspective and you see, oh, this guy is here because of that. Or this gate closed. Or the bell in Resident Evil 4 that you realize way later that actually it was a character that actually rang the bell in the village of Resident Evil 4. So yeah, this kind of thing, I really love that as a player. So if I can do that as a game designer.
Pokemon Gold and Silver, yeah, there's not, hey, all these new game pluses. I know we're close to time. I've just got two more. Real quick questions. Is there any detail or anything that you hold close to heart about Nuclear Blaze that, you know, me and Josh playing or anyone playing may miss, that you're like, oh, I wish more people were aware of this aspect of Nuclear Blaze?
Many details in it, but most what I really loved with player communities in general is that even if you have like a very obscure secret in your game, people would actually understand it anyway. SCP is quite easy because you can just Google it and you will see the references and see the backstory of a particular SCP anomaly that you can find in the game. And one thing I really like, it was a very important thing for me. It was one of the secrets at the beginning of the game where you basically see a boat in water, like a huge ship, and you have a very specific music playing at that time. It's actually at the beginning when you jump inside the pit, the very first large pit to get inside the facility. You can actually stick to the right side, and there is a very small secret place with no cats, just a letter on a special music and stuff. It's actually a reference to very old, I'm not sure it actually exported, but it's mostly a French game, I guess. But it was a mystery game where you had to solve a mystery on an island, and it should have seen a sequel, but the sequel never came because the company struggled and actually closed. So there was no sequel to this game, but it was a small secret, like something that most people would probably not understand, like a personal love letter to this never seen sequel.
I'm gonna go hunt that down after we get off this call. as a new solo dev, and I'm sure there are a lot more new solo devs coming into the scene as we speak, with each passing day, given the state of everything, what is your advice for, you know, someone who, you know, may have like done the path, they worked for a big developer or a big publisher, and now they find themselves out on their own doing everything for themselves and might be scared as hell? Like, what is your advice for those folks?
I would say it's less scary than it seems. Basically, when you are a solo dev or a team of two, for example, your costs are not that expensive. I mean, basically, you just have, for example, I would just give that away. For example, Nuclear Blaze, I think I sold on PC like 15,000 units. So it's not much, like it's not a big success, but it's not a failure either. But it's more than enough for solo dev. So it's a good thing to remember that your target is not to make like a million seller. You're not trying to do that because you don't have production cost that as a big company or even a small indie company. So as a solo dev, it's actually to remember that your goal is not that high. So you should feel cool about that. It doesn't make things easier. I mean, it's still hard to just sell a game and to get it to the players. I have this feeling that it's actually quite accessible and possible to do that as a solo dev, more than a team of 4, 5, 6 people. Way easier than that. So yeah, definitely it's easier than it seems for that. But also it's harder because you're working solo, so you have to make everything on your own. But it's a cool place to be right now, especially in the current economic situation, to be this small, very small segment of the market.
I love that advice. I think, I think too many people get into something and think they're going to be an overnight success, and people don't really see. They're like, oh no, like there's going to be ups and downs. We can't all be Balatro and come out and sell a million in a month. I lied. One more question. What are you playing right now?
I play right now. I'm spending, I don't play much because I don't have time. I also tend to get like bored by games. Not because I like, oh yeah, they're bad or something. More like because when I play a game, usually most of the time it just gives me idea to how to make another game. So I really have a hard time getting into a game. Like I play for 2 hours, 4 hours, I just stop. But the exception recently was Pacific Drive, which actually, I'm a big fan of SCP in general. And this one actually captured this feeling of being alone in a super hostile environment where things are weird, like really weird. And all the gameplay ideas they add in this game are really, really great. Like if the first time that you go outside of your car, you forgot to put the brake on and you do something and the car is like down the hill and you have to run after it because it actually went away just because you forgot to put the brakes. All these kind of small details actually create like a really great result in the end. And the lore and the place that you visit, it really feels like it feels like an SCP post-apocalyptic world, exactly the way I would love to see it. So it's a great game. I definitely spent too much time on it.
It's for sure on my backlog. I'm just looking at the stack and I'm like, I need to get to this.
You have to know that the onboarding on this game is the worst onboarding ever. Like it's hard to get past the first 2 hours. Like there are really lots of UX and UI issues with this game. But if you go past that, it's actually, it has meaning because the game feels like it's weird, but it's weird at every level, including the UI, which is not a good idea, honestly. But if you can go past the onboarding, it's actually better after. But the onboarding is awful.
I'll have to give it a go. I'll let you know how those opening hours are for me. Sebastian, thank you so much for making time chatting with us today. Again, thank you for Nuclear Blaze. It's awesome. And we look forward to what's next.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for your feedback. We just mentioned that, but it's important to know for players out there that we do listen as a developer. We do listen to podcasts. We do watch YouTube shows. We watch Let's Play and we listen and we do read a lot of discords and forums. So it's important for us when we get feedback like that. We actually do read them. And I don't just talk for myself. I know that many friends as developers in various company size actually do. So it's very important for us to get this kind of feedback and interaction in the end. Because we do read and listen to them a lot.
Well, that's good to know. So we're going to...
We have the powers, what I'm hearing.
You do.
More than we say nothing but nice things here, I swear.
Sebastian, I remember so many... Oh, sorry.
No, you're good.
I was saying I remember so many meetings on Dead Cells which were based on someone posted something on the forum just because we said, this guy is saying that. Maybe there is something we should probably address. So, yeah. It really has an impact, definitely.
You never know who's listening. Sebastian, thank you so much again, and we look forward to seeing what's next.
Thank you. Thank you for your time also.
Thanks, Sebastian.